Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, it's the end of October, All Hallows Ween.
All Hallows Weenie.
Yeah.
Are you dressing up?
No.
I dressed up. I had a party last night.
Oh.
I was the I was Alan from the Hangover movie with the baby.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. It's like a lot of people wanted to take pictures of stuff. It's cold down here, by the way. We had a little bit of an Arctic blast down about 65 degrees or so.
Oh, you must be freezing to death.
I'm shivering. Got to wear a sweater. Got to put my, got to bring my cardigan and my turtlenecks out. But you know what that signals, don't you?
Yeah, it signals it's the time for getting a new set of clothes.
Yeah, it's a sailfish, officially sailfish season down here in South Florida. And these are crazy fish, you know, the ones with the big bills, and they get
yeah, they got a big sail. It's a beautiful fish. Yeah,
beautiful. So they're kind of a protected species. You have to have special permits, which we have the boat. It's a migratory something or other species, you know, some kind of license that, of course, you have to pay for. But what's interesting about these fish, how we fish for them, is a couple
don't
different
you
ways.
Normally, wait, don't you normally just throw sailfish back?
Yeah, you don't keep. You can keep one per, I think it's one per day per boat.
You should go to that the big taxidermist operation there and get a sailfish.
You know what the funny thing about this is? You catch the sailfish. In the old days, they would actually take, I don't know what they did, but they'd mold it, whatever. Now yeah. You just take a picture of your sailfish.
Yeah, and then they give you a model.
Yeah, I don't. Who wants that?
It's a plastic model.
So ridiculous.
Yeah, it would look good in your tiki bar.
I guess. But we fish for
and by the way, you can Photoshop the picture and then get a bigger one.
Tell them it was 125. It was a record. So the way we fish for these, you can catch these sometimes trolling and all that, but we use live bait. We use something called pilchards or goggle eyes. Goggle eyes are very hardy fish. They're about maybe 6 inches long, weigh about maybe half a pound. And
a pound?
Yeah, maybe 4 ounces, 5 ounces, like that.
That's some bait.
Yeah, it's good size bait. They're very hardy. They swim really well because we can put a freaking hook in his mouth, or we have to do this bridling with these rubber bands so that actually the hook doesn't actually go through their body. We use a special sewing needle to put it through their back, and then we throw it out there. We have a kite flying in the meantime. We have a kite that's flying on the other end of a special little kind of a midget style fishing rod. With yeah. Actually, it's good to use an electric reel. It's easy to pull in and out. We have it go out. And then every so often there's a swivel. And they're different sizes. And once the swivel hits this particular kite clip, we then clip in to a ring that's on the line. And it sends can you imagine this? It sends the bait out, right? Does that make sense?
Okay.
And then we do three of those in a row, about 100 feet apart. The fish then hang vertically up and down perfectly in the water, just bouncing on the top of the water. On the top of that, we have these floats so we can see where they are to make sure they're in the water the whole time. We're just sitting there making sure that if the wind blows up and the kite goes higher, that the baits stay in the water. And then once the sailfish hits or a kingfish hits, whatever, and they hit these things hard and make this big thrash in the water, it snaps off of the kite clip and then you fight it.
And the kite goes flying?
No, the kite. Sometimes the kite gets dragged down a little bit. Yeah, no, the kite just stays up there.
Oh,
it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like a great idea.
It is. It's a great fit. It's whoever thought of this. It was very smart because the presentation in the water is perfect.
Fishing nut. That's who thought of it.
So anyway, I gotta adjust your sound because you're coming in hot. You're coming in cold. Let me tell you what's
going
on.
I'm coming in hot. I'm coming in cold.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Let me tell you what's going on with the markets. I don't know if you've been noticing there's a little bit of volatility that picked up there.
I'm trying to decide whether this, I think this is a top.
A top or a bottom?
I think it's a top.
This is the
top. I was thinking about this because I'm thinking about the cycles and the fact that some of these things are off kilter and they're not coming in at the right time. But I'm thinking, well, you know, it's always a little different. This is really this is the run up that you always get after a big crash.
You mean today's run-up? And
the what?
Today's run-up?
No, no. I'm talking about the entire market.
Oh, the whole thing.
From the minute Trump got in.
Uh-huh.
This has been a run-up, the classic run-up. It took place in a more compressed form in 1937. And it crashes before you have the real run-up, which is the next big bull market. And that crash should take place, I'm thinking, within the next few months.
So that kind of goes along with my thinking in terms of I had been thinking that because of all the different items that I've mentioned, like the tariffs and the harder to compare earnings on a year-over-year basis after we got this great tax bill. And, you know, you go down the list of the high the slowdown in China, and you add into that some of the, you know, political instability around the world, the whole list. I was thinking that we can actually have a run up into year's end and then a big roll down, and then it goes kaput from there. That's my plan.
Well, I think that would be best. I'm hoping that you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, but it could be similar to the roll off, but I mean, this is the 7 year after the crash, which I'm calling the crash 2007-2008. You would have something happen 7 years later, in this case, eight, seems to be stretched out a little bit, but, unless you want to move the crash to 2009, which would be the kind of match the formula much better.
March of 2009 was the low.
Okay. Well, that's good. So the thing is that, so we're looking, I think that this is like a run up that is just a preliminary, just to show you what can happen. Then it's going to do a reset, which will be the roll off. And hopefully it'd be I've seen this before when I was younger. I saw a roll off, the 69 roll off. It was like, it's starting to go down, but it's never really went. It was just rolling off every day, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit. It was almost like a bull market the way it goes up. It doesn't just go flying up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it did in 29, but that was a fluke, say the least. That never happens. It just rolls off and rolls off. And people say, well, let me just go to buy low, sell high, and they keep buying right down and the thing hits the ground. And that's the best time to short sell because you have a lot of time to make a decision. You can leverage if you want. You have, because there's no rush. You don't have to rush to sell because I don't think people are going to want to sell at all. I hope that's what happens because that would be nice and controlled.
But do you think that's possible in today's markets with the advent of not only high-speed trading and access very quickly due to the fact that everybody has computers? See, back then, people didn't have computers and they didn't really watch what was going on until the end of the day, the end of the week, the end of the month. Now we have them every second by second. People know what's going on.
I think that's why it might be a nice slow roll-off because of the computers.
So you think they'll hold it up somewhat?
Yeah, they'll hold it up so it won't be like in that normal, you know, the normal ratio is, I think, 3-1 up versus down. It goes up three times. It goes down three times faster than it goes up. So when it crashes, you know, with a thump. That may be prevented from by the oldest what you just said. It may be propping it up as best it can, keeps doing it, but it's always going to sneak down every little bit, just keep going and going and going. It could be a very long duration. That'd be great.
You know, it's interesting. There's been a lot of talk recently from all these market pundits, particularly a couple of guys on TV talking about how, man, we want to see a major flush out before the market opens.
Why?
Yeah, we want
to
see
that. Who the hell wants to see that? Are you nuts?
They want to see that and then a turnaround sometime during the day to the market highs. And that would cause them to buy. Because classically what you see is a purge, just a puking market that goes down. A lot of people are talking about this. We want the market to puke. And then it turn around that day. It's all the sellers are gone. And then we can feel good about getting back into the market. This is the recent narrative that's going around. There's some truth to that. I think there's some truth.
If that'd be great if it worked out.
But once everybody talks about it and knows it.
Yeah, it never happens.
Doesn't happen.
Because people try to front run it.
Right. So we saw some rampant selling throughout most of the week last week. Amazon earnings didn't help. Amazon is down to about, I don't know, 1,500 from 2,000. It's still ridiculous, but.
I'm looking at it. It's, I'm still thinking this is a good one to short. And I think puts at 700 or something like that, wow. A couple of years out.
Wow.
Well, it wouldn't be tomorrow. I mean, I'm a short term. I'm talking about long term put. You can get it for $2.
I don't know about that. Maybe.
Yeah. Really? I was looking. Well, but it's 2 years out.
Yeah. So what? Still. I mean, that, if it does come down to $1,000, that thing's going to be worth $25.
Yeah, or more.
Yeah. So Amazon earnings came in, didn't really help much in the market in terms of confidence, and that saw some additional downside selling on Friday. Wednesday of last week, the Dow dropped kind of most of the day, but at the last hour of the day, it plunged 350 points. Just straight
down.
Yeah,
I saw that. Straight down. Doesn't look good. Yeah, that's bad.
Yep. So much of the last hour plunge was recovered on Thursday, only to be sold again on Friday. Now, what was interesting about what happened Friday was that we saw the markets were trying to recover throughout most of the day. And then there was this discussion about, you know, just some tariffs issues and some, was that Friday? I'm trying to think if it was Friday or was that Monday? No, that was yesterday. That was yesterday.
Yeah, I think so.
Same thing though, you know, markets go up and then they're killed. And then today we saw markets turn around and a nice rally on the markets throughout the whole day. But last week, the SPY, the S&P 500 was down 4%. The NASDAQ 100 was down 3.5%. The Dow Jones down 3%. So now we're calling this the Halloweeny markets.
It's a good name.
Yep. So on Monday, here's my piece on this. Monday, the market recovered a bit, tried to keep it up. And then it was about 300 points. So until in the afternoon, there was some discussion about new tariffs being proposed if no significant progress was made at the G20 meeting. Now, this was another $529 billion of goods. It basically blanket every good that comes in from China at that point. Mm. And the Dow Jones was down at one point 525 points, a reversal of 800 points. Today, it was up 430 points. So this is not the kind of action you see in a bull market, by the way. You don't see this.
No, that's why I think, again, of course, you could see it as either a bottom or a top. But I don't see how it could even possibly be a bottom. It has to be a top.
Well, I'll tell you, and when you say a top, you're talking about on a long-term basis. You're not saying 1 week, 2 week, 3 months. You're talking about a longer-term top formation that ends up being.
Yeah, like when you have, right. When the market crashes, if you notice that you've seen a number of them, where the thing's down to 700 or whatever, 400 in one case, and it's just down at the bottom, it's spiking and going nuts. It looks like it's boiling waters, and it could go on like that for a while, and then it all of a sudden takes off. It's like people are, It's almost like people are adjusting their underwear. They're deciding, well, I should be in this, I should be out of that, I should be in this, I'm pulling, tugging.
You got boiling water, which is a great analogy, looking at the kind of the top bubbling up. And then you got adjusting underwear. I think this is a new strategy that we should bottle up.
Yeah.
But now October, the S&P is down 7.9% through today. The small caps are down 11%. NASDAQ down 10%, the worst October since 2009.
There you have it.
So here's a couple of really interesting observations. This is kind of cool, I think. So the Russell Small Cap ETF, IWM, just closed last week above two standard deviations below its 200-day simple moving average. Now, think about that. The 200-day moving average is a long-term trend indicator for a stock or for a price. So, you know, it's almost a year, right? In terms of trading days.
Yeah, absolutely.
It closed under it on Wednesday of last week. Not a regular occurrence. Two standard deviations below the 200-day simple moving average. Not a standard occurrence. Historically, I looked back in the past 10 years. When do we see that? We saw that in January through February. There's some times that we saw it below that of 2016. October 2015. September 2015. August 2015, October 2014, August through October, several times in 2011, October through December 2008. Do you notice a pattern at all in this?
Yeah, you got the same kind of month thing going on.
Yeah, I don't know what that exactly means in terms of if this is, you know, during bad times when market volatility hits? October seems to be a really wonky month.
Always has been.
Yeah. But that's the first of all. Then the other thing that I looked at was the S&P 500 through the symbol SPY, which is the ETF for the S&P 500. It closed just above on Friday, this three standard deviations below its 50-day moving average. On Wednesday, it was below it. First time since June 2016. It's pretty rare for that to close below. But it doesn't mean that the market's going to, you know, pop up. It can't obviously trend lower or sideways. One of the things I did notice when there was a break higher after we saw these kind of levels hit, they were usually pretty violent. And here's some past observations since 2006. This, you can see how rare this is. In June 2016, it was for one day. In August 2015, it was 4 days. June 2015, one day. And anyway, you look at this, it's been once every few years. They're clustered from in 2007, 2008, there was a bunch. 2015, there was a couple. Then there was back to 2007, 2006. And I put a chart here. You can find out exactly the details on the show notes for episode number 429 of DH Unplugged. And there's your little chart there.
Yeah, I looked at it there.
So pretty significant deviation and a statistical anomalies that's there. So the shakeout is there. The overdone levels in terms of comparative. And that, by the way, this only happens when you see sharp moves lower. Trends lower is not going to do this. And trends lower, when you see it slowly but surely, like you're talking about, probably would have...
Well, that's my wishful thinking, because you had your idea of the thing rolling off, and that's what I'm thinking, that could be a possibility.
Yeah.
Definitely not predicting it.
Right. So I'm still of the prediction, unless, of course, some of the data changes and inputs change and view of the markets, but... You know, for the year-end rally, for seasonality purposes, for chasing by hedge funds for performance, for the all-clear sign, if you know, with the hope that something's going to happen at the G20 meeting between the United States and China. Hope. I didn't say it's going to happen. I said hope. And then we'll see what happens with these midterm elections.
Yeah, the midterms will determine a little of this.
What's the score right now? Are the Democrats still ahead in the House?
Yeah, I think so. But that doesn't mean anything, because the way they do these pollings, they don't do a very good. They can't seem to get anyone to be honest with them, I guess. They've lost the trust of the public. I don't know. The only thing I've noticed that was kind of odd is that Trump's approval rating, according to Rasmussen, hit 50%.
But Rasmussen is always the high one.
He's not as bad as the other one. Zogby's the worst.
Well, when you poll people that like a certain candidate, you get a better result.
Usually, yeah. Who's on your mailing list?
So here's some really interesting news on Tesla. Elon Musk can't stop himself, it seems, by the way.
Yeah, something's wrong with that guy.
So just can't stop. He took to Twitter on Monday, and he said that he's deleting his Tesla titles. He deleted them all last week.
Yeah, well...
He wanted to see what happened. So he said, I deleted my Tesla titles last week to see what would happen. I'm now the nothing of Tesla. Seems fine so far. What is this? He took it off of the biography page and like the About Us and all that. So he's not really giving up his titles, because he can't just give up a title unless you resign. Right?
Yeah, I guess that's true, but they still have him working there. So maybe he's just an executive at large.
I think he just did this for I don't know. He must be staying awake at night thinking of crazy things, or he's hired somebody. I always think that these people have hired somebody to come up with just crazy stuff just for attention. And who does this kind of stuff?
Trump.
Okay. Aside from gun luck. But aside from that, I mean, really, is this what is the point of this?
He's got, I don't know. I mean, he's just a, Well, I know this. He just bought a bunch more shares of Tesla to try to prop up the stock. Forgot how much, but it was quite a bit.
20 million.
Yeah,
20 million. A little bit here and there.
Well, last time he did that, he ran the price of the stock, and then he got out.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, don't you remember?
Did he get out? Maybe.
Oh, I think he got in. He pumped it up, and then as soon as it started rolling over, he got out.
I don't remember that. It's possible. But I still wonder. I mean, first of all, I thought that the sanction that was put against him was he would no longer be chairman of the board, and that there would somebody have to be like an adult in the room when he tweeted, or it would have to go past somebody, or it's something he'd have to slow down his tweeting or something. And by the way, on a side note, Twitter has gotten...
He sold a bunch of the stock in May after he bought some of it.
This year?
Anyway, go on. So it sold like a lot, 2.7 million.
So it's got to be just about, I don't know. The whole Twitter thing is getting weirder by the day. I'm getting really tired of, first of all, the back slapping and the echo chambers and the constant, you know, just everybody being angry. Supposedly Twitter's coming up with a new
carping
thing. They're going to get rid of the like button?
They're thinking about it.
What is that?
The little heart.
What's the point?
They think it encourages people to go nuts, I think.
What do you mean to go nuts? Because there's likes on it?
I don't know.
It's probably the only thing that I could think of why they would do something like that is because now you'd be forced to type something, right? To say something, not just click a button. And maybe they're hoping to have more engagement.
Because maybe.
Otherwise, I don't really understand what the point is. I'm starting to get a bad vibe on this whole.
I think social networking would just blow up.
Yeah. Speaking of which, Facebook came out with the earnings tonight. Stock was down initially after hours and then popped back up. The company reported earnings of $1.76 a share, which was 32 cents better than estimates. Revenues rose 32.9% year over year. That's pretty impressive considering all the things that are going on, that their revenues rose that much.
Yeah.
They missed their revenue expectation by a little bit, though, a little smidge. Their expenses were up 53% to $7.95 billion. I still have not really understood how these companies spend so much money. Even if they have 35,000 employees. It's kind of like...
Well, I mean, it's trucks and offices, office space and telecom costs and... paint jobs and I don't know, but birthday cakes, I have no idea.
Servers?
Oh, yeah, servers are expensive.
Bandwidth?
Bandwidth, not cheap.
Daily active users were at 1.49 billion, 9% year over year. Monthly active users, so an increase of 10% year over year. Mobile advertising revenue was 92% of advertising revenue for the third quarter, up 88% of advertising revenue from the third quarter in 2017. Can you imagine all of a sudden if nobody had phones anymore? Facebook would be kaput. They estimated that 2.6 billion people now use Facebook, WhatsApp, Instagram, or Messenger, our family of services. And more than 2 billion people a day use at least one of them. That's a lot of people.
Yes. That's a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Servers. Yeah. That's where all the money is. That's got to cost a mint.
They also, so the stock was rolling down and it was up like 2.5% before the market closed. And it was down about 3.5% after the market closed, after this information came out, because I think they were focusing on revenue. And then they came out with in their conference call that they are raising their quarter four revenue growth outlook and they lowered their expense guidance. That's exactly what investors would want to hear, that they're going to be lowering their expense guidance. So the stock popped, I think it was up about 3.5% on top of maybe 3% on top of the 2.5%. So it's coming back a bit. Still not in great shape. The chart looks awful. I still have a big question on the long-term nature of this, but that this is a little trick that companies can pull when they have discretionary expenses, like maybe they're ramping up, Facebook was ramping up their oversight and they're trying to combat fake news and all that. So yeah. What happens is when you see that the investors are not very happy about the fact that you're spending that kind of money and, you know, it's really pushing down on your overall earnings, what you could do is just lay off a quarter or two. And then you come back to it, just like Amazon has done.
It's a good trick.
Yeah, it's a great trick. Bill Gross, you know who that is, right? The king of
bond guy.
So he left PIMCO, and there was a whole kerfuffle about what happened there, and people were upset, and there was this issue, and he left, and there was a question about why, and he was losing his another guy that was losing his mind a little bit, and he opened up the Janus Henderson Global Unconstrained Bond Fund. It's a mouthful. Basically, it was allowing him to do whatever he does. Let Bill Gross do what he does best. Got a team together, put this thing up, got a bunch of money in, a bunch of money left. What's interesting is that when you look at the amount of money that Bill Gross had in the fund himself, his family's fortune, if you will, he withdrew about $150 million worth of, I think he had about $550 million in there. So he just removed $150 million out of that. So the question is he lost his mojo? Is he, you know, maybe he just needed the money to, I don't know, pay off a mortgage or something, but it's a lot of money that he took out of that fund from his own account. And you have to wonder if he's losing faith and confidence in himself.
Well, you know, everybody who is a stock picker has its moments.
The day in the sun.
And then you can't do anything. It's like watching the way Clay Thompson, the point forward for the point guard for the or the shooting guard for the Warriors, mm-hmm. set the record for most 3 points in a half, mm-hmm. and then set the NBA all-time record for most 3 points in a game, uh-huh. being encouraged by his teammate Steph Curry, who had the old record. And before this game, and he scored 52 points, or 51 or 52, and before this game, he was something like 5 for 35 shooting 3 points. He couldn't hit anything. Oh. He hit one, none, one. He couldn't, and then he hits 14. So he won't hit that many the next game. I don't know what you do when you get hot like that, except keep shooting.
It just never stop.
Yeah.
Just stay awake the whole season. Stay on the court wherever you can. So I guess maybe he lost his mojo a little bit. Maybe he lost his abilities a little bit. This is a good point. Somebody brought up something in the chat room. How about the I didn't put this on our list today to talk about, but it's a real important thing. So thanks for bringing this up. Is what's your take on this whole Red Hat IBM deal?
Oh, yeah, that is a good thing to discuss. And I don't really have much of a take. I don't know. I mean, IBM has been courting and trying to kind of monopolize Linux for as long as I can remember, maybe 15, 20 years. And they saw this opportunity to overpay for Red Hat.
63% premium.
Yeah.
I have some people that I know that work there, good friends of mine, at Red Hat.
Okay, what did they say?
I would like to say that they weren't thrilled. It seems, first of all, that this is a move out of desperation for IBM. They're stopping their share buybacks for a while. This is a $35-plus billion deal. That's a big number. And is a much different work experience and corporate culture at Red Hat than IBM. There's no question about that. There's just no question about that.
No.
And the other issue is that, you know, what I found most interesting was a little tidbit that I learned after the fact. It was like a day after or something like that, that it turns out that Red Hat had actually had discussions or reached out or something with several other firms about the possibility of a merger or a buyout, which I found really fascinating. Like, what is so in other words, this was not necessarily prompted by IBM 100% going after Red Hat because they just have nothing to show for anything. They want to get their workforce. They want to get the whole Linux thing. It also looks like this was something that Red Hat was looking for. So I wonder if there's a change in their business or some, I don't know. But why would Red Hat be actively looking and talking with other firms?
I have no idea. I mean, Red Hat is kind of the standard for industrial strength Linux used by companies. It's not so much of a product used by individuals, which tend to fall over to the kind of the Ubuntu style Linux distros. It fits kind of in with the IBM's type of customer. And maybe they wanted to get into that market, or maybe maybe IBM was working on a killer this is a joke, I'm even saying this, some sort of a Linux that actually works. I have no idea.
I mean, it does seem that IBM could benefit for something like this, and there is some synergies. I could definitely see that too because of, you know, the cross-pollination of various customers in their vertical market space in terms of size of clients, type of clients, service-oriented, type of services they'll offer. But again, you know, paying a 63% premium, basically going back to the all-time old high for Red Hat. And, you know, at the same time, I don't know where IBM finished today, but IBM was pretty much clobbered. It was down to like 118. Let's see where it closed. It probably was up today due to IBM. Oh, that's not how you spell it. It closed at 115. It was down another 2.75% today.
So well,
it's gone.
They're going to have to. They got a lot of explaining to do.
In the last 5 days, it has gone down a total of 16 points. Yeah, let me see. 5 days. Yep. 50. Yeah. This year to date, it's down from a high of 168 to 115. Ouch. This month, it's down from 153. So it's down 40 points, give or take a couple points.
Sounds about right.
In this month. So, but today's market was really good. So I don't know what's going on with that. It opened up today at, it opened up today at 120. It finished basically dead on the low. So somebody doesn't like that deal. And yeah, somebody's mentioning there is obviously cloud opportunity for them. And, you know, IBM has been trying to reach for that. But it also seems kind of late, doesn't it? Late cycle?
IBM has been really on the short end of the stick for decades.
Has IBM any better at buying companies than Microsoft has been?
Well, that's a question I can't answer. Microsoft has not been very good, shuttering a lot of operations. Not as bad as everybody else. I mean, everybody else is worse. I mean, Yahoo and Google and these guys, they just drop. That's why I don't trust Google to get into one of their systems. You know, you want to, let's use their system, and then they just kill it. I'd have to look into it. I think they're pretty good at selling pieces of their company better than they are buying anything.
Well, yeah, they sold a lot of the big parts of their business. Remember that giant chunk that they sold?
They sell
Oracle, them. Oracle, whatever? What did they sell it to?
They've been piecing themselves into oblivion.
They're like cutting off appendages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here, here's my arm. Hey, I feel so much better.
Yeah. Let's talk about Germany for a second. Angela Merkel is not running again for office after 2021.
Well, that's she can change her mind. If she really wants to quit, quit now.
She's been the chancellor for 13 years.
Yeah.
Running through the good times and bad times. I mean, they have a whole different political system, obviously. A whole different political system and election process. And, you know, where they you know, have the confidence and no confidence votes and all that. That's some crazy stuff.
Well, I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah. In Brazil, I don't know how to say this guy, Jair Bolsonaro.
Yeah.
The far-right lawmaker. They call him the far-right. Was elected president on a market-friendly agenda.
Yeah.
And afterwards, what happened was that the markets went up. Markets then came right back down. It was down, it's like an 8% turnaround to the downside. They were up a little bit today. One of the big reasons that people are citing was that there was not a lot of details revealed. They were looking for him to win. And I guess in his speech, you know, say, oh, we're going to do this, that, this, that, this, and then not.
They didn't do anything.
No. So
they hate him.
Who hates him? Oh.
The people that didn't vote for him.
Well,
so just like a Trump situation.
So it is, but there's all sorts of talk about how Facebook ruined or helped him, but ruined the election. There was all sorts of bad information that was being put out. Like, oh, you know, somebody said, the election location has changed, and they put this stuff out. And so people would go to the wrong locations and couldn't vote. So supposedly Facebook is the epicenter of anything that goes wrong. You could blame Facebook too. I don't know if that's the fact, but that was all over the place. This whole ridiculous.
Well, the Brazilians are really into social networking to an extreme, so they could be maybe, but they're so gossipy too that I just don't see it happening that way. Because people talk to each other,
right? And why would somebody believe something? I mean, I guess obviously people do believe things on social media, but how would you get all that information out in such a way that it just? I guess he could do some kind of a campaign.
The guy was going to win anyway. I don't know what all this complaining is about.
He won 56% of the vote.
Yeah.
So, and then finally in this section, let's talk about why can't you just stop for one day with this stuff? Just one day. This morning, President Trump seemed to have woken up very early because I saw this on the news very early and is returning to one of his presidential campaign themes. Yes. He said in an interview that he plans to use an executive order to end citizenship rights for babies born in the U.S. to parents who aren't citizens.
Yeah.
And he's going to do this through an executive order. Can he do that? So basically,
I looked it up. So it has to do with the 14th Amendment. It was written so slaves could be citizens and so that could their kids. And the guy who wrote it in 1866 wrote a long essay on what it can and cannot do. And it was never intended to allow for people to just waltz into the country and have a baby and the baby becomes an American automatically. And I think most people know that. Nobody wanted to enforce it because it seems so cruel. And Trump, of course, doesn't care. And so I think he can. Just the interpretation of the rule. It'll go to court. No one's going to get very far. It's going to go through court. But when goes through court, it's going to go up to the Supreme Court.
Bingo.
I'm bingo.
Yep. Bingo, bango, bungo. Payback time for helping me get in, even though I like beer.
I like beer. I really like beer.
But what's going to go in? So just to explain this to people, what's going to go in front of the court and why it's going to get involved here is it's going to be a test of the ability for an executive order to override a constitutional amendment. That's what it's going to be. You'll have components of looking at the 14th Amendment as well.
I think that's going to be the way it's going to be sold, but I don't believe that's the case. The 14th Amendment is enforced a certain way that is questionable, and Trump is going to bring that question into play by putting through the executive order and making it go to the Supreme Court to see if this questionable enforcement is right or wrong. I don't think he's changing the amendment at all.
So here's what I think.
He's all about implementation, not change.
I think that I'm okay with people having babies here in the citizenship, you know, upon the birth in the land that you are, you know, giving birth in. However, what I find interesting, what I find really kind of fascinating is this is a fantastic technical move. This is a great chess piece move Because now if you think about what this does is it makes people think twice about entering the country with the idea that they're having a baby or maybe would have a baby and would have the opportunity to have that child to be a citizen. And who knows, possibly then get their own citizenship.
It could be just the opposite. It could be just like your commentary about the Chinese import taxes. The place gets flooded with aliens to have babies just before the law gets changed over.
Oh. Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. We shall see.
Yeah.
We shall see. There's a list of pot stocks, which are pretty much dead on the vine. So you can check that out. Of course, it's important to note that we're getting towards the end of the year, and you have to get your taxes done, your expenses done, and what you do is when you do your taxes, you list all the different things. And I don't know how this plays because we're not a 501c3 company or whatever. But if you want to donate, maybe you try to deduct it. I'm not saying that as an advisor. I'm just saying that I heard somebody say it somewhere along the line. But anyway. You could donate to the show, help us out. We do need your money, lots of it. You could go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the donation button, and just donate away. It's very important because we don't have advertisers. Every once in a while we have one, but we don't have any advertisers. We don't really.
Or get us an advertiser.
That's also true. That's also something.
I don't think the donation for the expense is the way to go anyway. So it's just to make you feel good. Help us. Let us know that you support the show. Servers are expensive.
Yep. And we just saw that with the money that Facebook is paying. And especially if you like that, we have streaming. Now we even have streaming servers.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it costs more than anything.
Yep. And of course, it is show number 429. This is a special one. This is the Halloween edition. And if you want to get a t-shirt, an official DH Unplugged t-shirt, what you can do is donate $429. Think about that for a second. Not that much money in the big scheme of things.
I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
I have my daughter draw a spectacular jack-o'-lantern on the shirt.
Oh, on the shirt?
Yeah.
Can we do that? Can that happen? We have so much difficulty, you and I, just putting our name on it.
No, she knows what she's doing. We don't know what we're doing.
Well, I feel like how many shirts did we burn trying to just figure out what pen to and how many pens did we buy?
I don't know. I got a lot of them. They come in handy.
So yeah, you can, if you want your jack-o'-lantern, you want your signed shirts by John and myself, you want to help with the show, you want to feel good, you want to just, get in the groove here, you can donate $429 and put your name and address, your shirt size, and we'll ship that off to you post haste over on DH Unplugged. Now here's something interesting. Advanced Micro Devices, the close to the pin competition. Ooh, that got crazy, huh?
Yeah, I had a hunch you might.
Advanced Micro Devices, it was requested that we would put in a, move it to after the AMD earnings, because we thought that somebody thought, hey, this is a good idea. It's only a few days later. So we did move it to that. And boy, oh boy, that changed the scorecard dramatically. Because on earnings, AMD was down like 18%. On top of the fact it was fading anyway. I think when we first started this, it was like $32.
Yeah, it was doing its old thing. It does this constantly.
Yeah. So it flipped the board all around.
Headed to three.
What's that? Headed to three, you think so? I would say six. I'll go with six.
Six is pretty bad, but it's where it's headed.
Right. So right now we do have a winner for that. And I want to mention something else. Remind me that I have to talk about, just remind me I have something to mention about this. But the final stock price was $19.27. Paul R. came in 40 cents from the actual number with his guess of $19.67. He was like the low man down there, all down there. 2.08% away from the actual number. Average price for entry for all of the people that entered was $26.14. I was a mere 37% away. That's, by the way, because I put my number in before. Not that I know, I don't know if I would changed it, but I put my number before we decided to extend it and I couldn't change it. But nonetheless, runner up was Chris H. He was in at $21.39 and he was 11. The next closest was 11% off.
Wow.
So Paul R., you are very deserving of a t-shirt. Now, this is something that this brings up, and that is that Paul R. is from South Africa. And we don't send things to South Africa. So I asked Paul, I said, and sometimes I've gotten things from Canada, other places, people want to send things. I said, listen, do you have a U.S. address that things get forwarded to? You know, that you get maybe a friend or a family or something.
Or a forwarding service.
Yeah, something. So we will send it, but, we got to.
It'll get lost. It gets stolen.
Yeah, possibly.
We've been shipping no agenda rings all over the world, and it's just like a nightmare.
So I'm just letting you know that if you do play the game and you're out of the country, we will do our best to get it to you, but we're hoping that you have an alternative address in the United States for us to mail it to you. I added that actually to the rules on the close to the pin. That's something we've talked about before, but we never had a South Africa winner. Huh. So you're the star of your country, my friend. Very exciting. I'll be down. I'm going to South Africa this summer.
Take the shirt with you.
I could. Interesting. Maybe. I think he's in Johannesburg too. And I think.
That's probably where you won't go.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, we'll have another Close to the Pin coming up shortly. A quick update. We haven't talked about this for a while. The Global Millennials Thematic Challenge.
Yes.
The old codgers are up 5.8% since inception.
Is this what you wanted me to remind you about?
No. The reminder was about South Africa.
Oh, okay.
You reminded me. I felt it come through the microphone. I felt it. I felt your reminder.
Psychic reminder.
Yeah. The millennial portfolio is up 43%. Old codger's not doing so well. Oh, well.
Well, it's okay.
It's up. It's up. And I assume
we'll see what happens.
I assume there was we did not go over GE. Somebody's asking about GE. I don't want to talk about GE. GE was down like 9% today. They cut their dividend down to 1 cent from 12 cents. All sorts of charges and problems and not getting better. And forget. I'm done with GE. I'm done. Done with GE. In other important news, by the way, I don't know if you saw this, but Kanye West, do you follow him at all?
Well, not like a fan.
No. He was all over this whole, North Korea, and he had lunch with President Trump, and he said recently his eyes are now wide open and he's backing away from politics. Well, he said that he was used to spread messages he did not believe.
Yeah, what specifically?
There was something about Blexit, which is blacks,
yeah, they're
leaving the Democratic Party.
Yeah,
and I guess he didn't believe that, and somehow he was named as a believer in this and trying to push that. So I don't know. I don't know what does it mean that his eyes are now wide open.
It doesn't mean anything. It's Kanye.
Maybe it's an infamous song. That's what it is. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be a song. He's backing away from politics.
Good catch. Yeah, absolutely.
That's what it's going to be. His eyes are now wide open. Eyes wide open. That's what it's going to be. There's a song coming out. I'm telling you. There's a big oops. You probably saw this story. Military officials.
I didn't see it, but I heard about it. This is hilarious. This thing landed in my backyard. It belongs to me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Military officials say an Air Force C-17 prematurely dropped a Humvee by parachute into rural North Carolina, miles away from the intended target. No injuries. Fort Bragg spokesperson Tom McCollum told news outlets that the parachute opened and the vehicle landed Wednesday in a wooded area between two homes. Right in between two homes. How convenient, right? Between the Jacksonville and Spout Springs communities in Hornet County, about 7 miles north of Fort Bragg's drop zone. I how does that even happen?
I have no idea. Hey, there's that son of a bitch down there. I didn't know he lived here. Drop that thing on him.
Yep. Drop the ball on him. This is probably my favorite story. We don't have clip of the day like we have that you have on No Agenda, which, by the way, you can listen to No Agenda every Thursday and Sunday for just chock full of goodies. Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak. Remind me, I got to talk to you about something about Adam. I think there's a wedding date.
You do?
I think.
Well, that would maybe get our donations up.
One track mind, huh? I think that's what he was saying there. I don't know. I have to talk to you about it. But maybe we'll all finally meet up.
Where's this supposed to be?
I know nothing more. I know nothing. Nothing. I just saw something about a date somewhere, something, and I don't know. I don't know if that's what he was even saying. I'm not even sure what he was saying, but I think that's what he was saying. It came in a text message to me, so we'll talk about it. But that would be fun if that is the case.
Well, as long as it's not on a Thursday.
Or a Tuesday. Or a Sunday.
Yeah.
Otherwise, he's good to go.
Yeah. Saturday, maybe, perhaps. I don't know. It has to
be Saturday part day.
We're going to end up having to take a day off, I can tell.
Really? Oh. Well, maybe. Unless,
we have interviews lined up, hopefully.
Unless it could be a wedding-o studio kind of thing.
Oh, a green screen wedding.
Something. Just saying. Yeah. I thought this is really probably the funniest story coming up right here. A Tennessee doctor has retired her medical license after it was discovered that she borrowed a hefty loan from a longtime patient. Then diagnosed the woman with dementia when she asked for her money back. So this woman, Dr. Lee, who is 79, an internal medicine specialist in Columbia, retired her license last month in a peculiar case before the Tennessee Board of Medical Examiners, who's responsible for disciplining doctors. The government's attorney said she borrowed $300,000 from a patient when her medical clinic fell on hard times. And when the patient later requested payment, she diagnosed her with this dementia in apparent effort to escape the debt.
Wow.
What a great plan.
Oh, brother. She go to jail.
Lastly, I'll mention that I put out a piece. I sent it to you. It was a long research piece that we put together on the differential and benefits potentially of passive and active investing in fixed income. Because everybody's been so brainwashed over the years, right? That passive investing is the only way to go. We've heard that 100 times, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's cheaper. There's more transparency. So we put it to the test. We used all sorts of returns on a 3, 5-year, 10-year basis, did 3-year rolling returns, used Sharpe ratios, Sortino ratios. We used, what else do we use? We used a couple other ones. And to try to figure out what was the actual story with this and if there's any truth to it. And we showed results from about 8 different sectors inside the area of fixed income. Pretty cool. Go over to the report on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. It's called A Fly in the Ointment. And it tells you piece by piece with charts and graphs and tables about what outperformed, what didn't, and conclusions on each of the various sectors of fixed income. Pretty fascinating. I encourage you to go there, check it out. And I personally would like to hear your thoughts on it on Twitter. So when you read that, come back to Twitter and let me know your thoughts. I think it's a pretty eye-opening. I think in the words of a famous song, my eyes are now wide open.
Yes, a future famous song.
Yeah, exactly. So enough about me. What would have potentially, possibly, John C. Dvorak written if he was going to do so for PC Magazine this week?
Snapchat, I think, is undervalued.
What? Huh? Where does that come from?
It comes from my kids, and I may even put it on the game. I don't know when, because I don't know where it's going to settle out at. But according to them, according to the millennials, this is the product that all the kids really use, because this is what I'm told, and I don't think they're putting me on. They say the kids, which is the teenagers, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds use Snapchat because Snapchat is safe. They don't have to worry about showing their breasts, these little girls, to their boyfriends and getting busted for child pornography.
All right, let's back up. Are you saying that they can show their breasts to their boyfriends, but it disappears, so therefore it's not on anywhere to be found?
Yes.
That assumes that it.
No,
really
I know
is
what
destroyed.
It assumes. I'm agreeing with you about what it assumes, but that's the way it's sold,
so
and
you're
that's
saying
what they
their
believe.
Perception is that it disappears,
and it and the claim is that it disappears.
Yeah.
They claim it disappears, and right. The perception is it disappears. They think it disappears, and nobody's been busted yet. But apparently all the sexting that there is in the world seems to be taking place on Snapchat, and nobody discusses this because it's a little lewd to even bring it up, let alone in a column. But that's why he believes, him and his buddy are stock guys, I think they are anyway.
That's what, 680 or something like that? Snap?
He says if you look at all the PEs for all these companies that do similar stuff, theirs is way too low. The stock is undervalued. Just based on that alone.
$6, it was up 7% today, probably in advance of you saying this.
It could be, but whatever the case, it is a potentially a gem in those because of this. These kids, they're all a bunch of sex fiends, I guess. They were raised on porn. What do you expect from these kids?
Well, but what I don't understand is that you can take a screenshot of.
Yes, you can. I guess it's usually on a phone. It's really hard. I don't know how easy it is to take a screenshot on a phone.
Huh.
Nobody's
using
Snapchat. Nobody's using computers for any of this. Let me tell you.
Do you know that Snapchat owns Bitmoji?
I don't know what you mentioned Bitmoji before, but I still don't know what they are.
It's like what my mother uses. She doesn't like text me anything. She just sends me like a animation of herself, not animation, a caricature of herself that you can create with something that says like, yeah, or hey, have a great day. Or, you know.
Okay.
That's how my mother communicates with me.
Well, I think Snapchat went up because they're getting involved in content. And because everybody has to, I guess, or you can't be a company.
Right.
And so I'm just thinking, well, maybe Snapchat's not the dog we make it out to be.
All right. Well, we can go with that. Let's see here. I got to open this up. All right. So at this point, we're going to segue over to the game that we play. It's the weekly stock picks portion of the show. It's a game that we play just for the sheer fun of it. It's not a recommendation to buy or sell any security of any sort at any time in any nature. And of course, if you decide for whatever reason to follow along some of the things we talk about, and you do in fact invest in any of these, please see professional financial advice. And we are not liable for any of this because we're not recommending it in any way whatsoever. No winks there either. We're not. John C. Dvorak, myself, Horowitz, company clients may own any of the securities mentioned. We'll duly mention that. You can track all this over on DH Unplugged under the weekly stock picks and check out what's going on with how much they're up, how much they're down, etc. We put special stops on here, so we'll just leave it at that. Why don't you take the list?
I'm in the good here with Apple, which I've been on since 2018, up 14%. Walgreens Boots, my favorite. It's my Crocs. Up 19%. That's looking good. Your muni bonds play short. It's finally activated. It's up almost 10%. Supermicro, which was a joint pick, which is we've never gone wrong, never lost a nickel on any of those, but we did get bounced with only a 3% gain. Your kind of dead money with United States Natural Gas, Pyxis International and Tandem Diabetes Care. You just put them on.
It came off the next day. It came off the next day.
They get kicked off the next day.
You can't go long in a rough market.
It's hard.
Yep.
So we have Salesforce, which is my pick. That didn't go. It went up. I shorted it, and it went up 6.4%. So that says to me, well, maybe it's time to short a few more of these things, a few more operations.
Well, do you want to put Snap on here?
Yeah, let's put Snap. I'll go long on Snap.
Okay, we got that. Let me copy a few things over here. Oops. What else you got? Because I have nothing.
I was going to go short on Amazon.
Oh, boy. All right, we got it coming up. Amazon. Short.
And you know what? I'm going to add another one just to be in a short party. It's short time. Party time. I'm going to short Netflix.
What? Wow. Wait, Control V. Short Amazon. Okay. Short Snap, and short Netflix. And that's not the worst thing I've ever heard in my life.
Well, Reed Hastings just dumped $34 million worth of his shares, and they didn't dump it at a high point. So I don't think – again, you can't base shorting on people's sales. That's a rule you just don't want to break. But coincidentally, I'm just pointing it out.
Okay, that's one. All right, we're good with that. I have some names. I should probably go back to my mattress firms at this point because we saw some of the housing prices slow down again this week. We saw the Case-Shiller come in.
Well, yeah, it came
5.5% growth. So it's still gaining, but it was supposed to be 5.8, and it's lower than the 6.5 that has been. So 31. Is there any Halloween stocks out there? I mean, what's a Halloween stock?
The movie company that produced the movie Halloween?
Like Fox or something?
I don't know. I have no idea.
All right. Well, I'll do some more research for next week. How's that?
Okay.
All right, we're going to end it right there and say goodbye. We're right on our hour mark, so there you go. Perfect timing.
Yep, and I'll talk to you Tuesday.
Okay, ciao.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.